Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, July 24th. I'm Ray Graff. No, it's June 24th. I don't want to get ahead of myself. It's Pets and Vets today, and joining us is Dr. Kerry O'Loughlin, recently retired, world traveler, but still knows a lot about your pets. If you have a question about your dog or your cat or your pet rock, as someone in the newsroom wants me to talk about, they're very helpful. Call 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email voxpop@wamc.org with your question about your doggy or your kitty, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. Dr. Kerry O'Loughlin and your pet questions coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today. And here to take your calls is Dr. Kerry O'Loughlin. Now retired, Dr. O'Loughlin practiced for years at Del Mar Animal Hospital and is a graduate of Cornell University. If you have a question about your pet, the number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Kerry O'Loughlin, a solo shot today. How are you?
I'm good. I just realized when you read that intro that it's almost exactly to the day a year since I retired.
Really?
Yeah.
Time flies.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look relaxed and tanned and everything
is going
well.
Yeah, been having a fun year.
Well, that's great. That's great. How long before you don't answer my calls anymore on the show?
It depends on how quickly my veterinary knowledge starts seeping out of my memory cells.
Oh, come on. So, you know, ticks are in the news. Ticks are, apparently there are more of them than ever before, and there are new kinds too,
yes.
Right?
Yes, I actually just saw this article in the Times Union yesterday. Lone star ticks. Both the ticks are from the South, and obviously originally from Texas with the name Lone Star Tick. And the other one is the Texas longhorned tick. So the Lone Star Tick we've had around here, you know, in bits and pieces for years, although they seem to be becoming more numerous. And they're now considered kind of established in this area.
Yeah.
And the Lone Star Tick is a concern for both dogs and people. They can spread Ehrlichia in dogs, which is one of the tick diseases that we test for.
Yeah.
I've been occasionally spotting Ehrlichia positive tests on my patients for years, but up until just recently, they were almost always Southern Rescue dogs.
Yeah.
That probably came with their Ehrlichia. But I have, in the past couple of years, found a couple of my local patients testing positive. So it is starting to creep into the area. Luckily, Ehrlichia, kind of like anaplasmosis, is not very good at making dogs sick. They can get sick. They can have high fevers and joint pain and lethargy. But it doesn't happen very often. You see a lot more positive tests than you see sick dogs.
Uh-huh. Is that common with Lyme and things like that too?
Yes. Especially Lyme, especially now that most dogs are vaccinated. Before they were vaccinated, we were seeing sick dogs almost every day.
Yeah.
But now that our patients are all vaccinated, we rarely see a sick dog with Lyme. The other thing that the Lone Star Tick does is it's got that molecule in its saliva that can make people allergic to beef and eggs.
This is terrifying to me, personally.
Yeah. Yeah. And the problem I was reading about is it wasn't the Lone Star Tick, it was the other one. The long-horned tick, as far as I can tell right now, doesn't spread any disease, but to be determined.
Give it time.
And the problem is they don't need a partner to reproduce. They
can just
produce lots of eggs and make babies all on their own.
You're kidding me.
No. So they're going to spread like wildfire, probably.
That's great news. And what about this New World screw worm? Have you heard about this thing?
I have. I remember learning about it in vet school. It was something that was always a problem in, like, beef cattle in Texas.
Yeah.
It's where it is again. But, you know, they had one of those things. They had thought they eradicated it, and it snuck back in.
Should I be scared of that, too?
No.
No?
No.
All right, because I'm usually scared about most things. The number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. And we have a couple of emails here, so we'll start with those. This one came in very early today. It was from Cheryl. Actually, not that early. Yeah, Cheryl was just on time. Would you be able to recommend a fiber additive for my 12-year-old neutered male cat who's been recently diagnosed with inflammatory bowel disease and on a low dose of budesonide? He is eating a novel protein source of canned rabbit food. The fiber content is quite low. He gets constipated occasionally. I have not been given any recommendations, but surely there must be something safe for me to add. And that's from Cheryl.
Yeah, so if she's worried about constipation, honestly, something like Miralax works really well in cats. Miralax is a laxative. So what it does is it softens the stool and helps the cat pass it. And a little bit goes a long way. So I usually tell people to start with an eighth of a teaspoon and use it to effect. If the stool starts getting too soft, then you back off. If it's still hard, then you can add more. And it's flavorless. The cat doesn't know it's in the food. You just mix it in the canned food.
But that's not a permanent solution, right?
Some cats need it, especially like elderly cats that get dehydrated pretty easily.
Yeah.
And especially older cats, sometimes their colon doesn't move the stool along. And the colon's job is to remove fluid. So if the stool sits in there too long, it gets very dry. And sometimes we have to anesthetize cats to get the poop out. So
Okay, we're already
just starting with poop, Ray.
Mid-season form, that's wonderful. Des in New Windsor says, a couple of months ago, we adopted an 8-year-old rescue kitty from a well-regarded shelter we've gone to in the past. Their vet gave her a thorough health check, including some teeth extractions and flea treatment. Recently, when she began digging on her ears, our local vet removed a lot of black debris. He said it was not ear mites and prescribed Automax for 10 days. We finished the treatment. She's back to scratching her ears. She also seems to have some balance issues. What do we do? And that's from Des in New Windsor.
So, black wax in the ear. Some kitty cats, and I feel this is an allergy-related thing, make too much earwax. I mean, they can have wax in their ears from ear mites, mm-hmm. but that's usually a kitten issue. You know, usually by the time they're an adult, they're past that.
Right.
It can be a yeast infection or a bacterial infection, although bacterial infections, it doesn't tend to be black. With the yeast, it's often black.
Yeah.
So if it's a yeast infection, the Otomax should take care of it. Some kitty cats just have itchy, waxy ears. And I find a little drop of Otomax a couple of days a week will sometimes just keep that at bay.
Is that over the counter?
No, it's a prescription.
Okay.
So they'd have to get it from their vet. If their cat's really starting to have balance issues, though, they might want to get it rechecked because an external ear infection should not cause a balance issue per se.
All right. We have an email here from Dr. K, who writes, Proviable fiber is an excellent...
What? Yep.
Excellent fiber supplement for cats with both soluble and insoluble fiber.
Yes. That's something that came out just about the time I was retiring. Proviable is a probiotic powder.
Yeah.
But now they've come out with the Proviable fiber. So yes, that's not a bad idea.
Well, thank you, Dr. K. Dr. K is a veterinary acupuncturist.
Yes.
Isn't that something? Do you ever do that? You ever jab a pet
my own animals have had acupuncture from other veterinarians.
Dr. Dallas does that sort
yes.
of thing as well.
Yes.
What sort of results do you see from that?
It depends on what they're treating. I know Dr. Dallas is very successful with a lot of her patients. Unfortunately, my two dogs had spinal cord issues that was a little beyond help by
right.
the time I tried the acupuncture, so it didn't.
Do you still have turtles and stuff?
No.
Fish?
I have fish.
You still have fish.
I have aquariums and I have a single cat.
Did you ever have turtles or did I imagine?
No.
No? Okay, well, that's me for you.
We have frogs in our pond outside our
Oh,
back
really?
Door.
Oh, very interesting.
But no, I'd love to have turtles, but turtles tend to stay where they're born, and where frogs, you build it, they will come. So as soon as we put the pond in, the frogs were there.
When you went to veterinary school, did you have to learn about some of these wild critters?
No, you could. I worked in the wildlife clinic when I was in vet school and volunteered at the hawk barn where they did the rehab.
of hawks.
Hawks and eagles and owls.
Wow. And so what did you learn about that? The rehabbing of birds is an interesting topic.
It was pretty cool. Yeah? It was fun. You used to take them out and what they call creants fly them, where you put tethers on their legs and attach basically kite string with a little spool on a kite spool. And you take them out and you let them go and you see how far they'll fly.
The number
and
here,
then you reel them back in.
You know, the number here is 800-348-2551, and we'll take a break here in a moment and then go to the phones. I think it was Saturday morning. I was up early, and they had Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, the ancient shows from the 60s and 70s.
I used to watch that all the time.
It was on MeTV, and I'm watching it. And so it's about falcons, I believe. And this guy's in the wild, and he buries himself in the sand and puts a wire mesh helmet on his head and covers it with grass. And then he has a little furry rodent or something that he had on a string, and he lured the falcon in and then grabbed him and put a hood on him. Isn't that the craziest thing you've ever heard?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of... I know falconry is a big for some people. Because a lot of them, they do that. They basically capture wild birds and make them pets.
They just tag this guy and let him go.
Oh, that's good.
But it was...
That's one thing.
Seeing this guy make a helmet out of grass and wire mesh, frankly, I thought I was imagining the whole thing. Let's take a break. Yes, I digress. But you know, it's summer, it's hot. I'm losing lucidity as we speak. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC Pets and Vets. Ray Graff with you, joined by Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin today. The number to call is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Anne is in Poughkeepsie. Hello, Anne.
Hello. Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi there.
Hi. I have another poop question.
Ah, splendid.
I have a 15-year-old dog in generally good health, except that she has had chronic diarrhea for many months, maybe possibly at least 9 months. And we've tried multiple strategies for food, you know, sort of starting with white rice, chicken breasts, and pumpkin with probiotic, and then we've tried with fiber powders, and it'll get adjusted, and then it will go back. So our most recent strategy has been just a plain kibble with literally a spoonful of soft food on top, and she was doing great for about a month, and then she's gone back, and I can't help but think she's quite uncomfortable, although she doesn't complain, but I mean very, very liquid poops.
Okay.
Okay.
Suggestions.
So couple of quick questions, Anne. So is it that does she have any urgency? Like, does she have to go out and does she produce like little bits of poop that's very loose? Or is it just she goes out her normal once or twice a day to poop and it's very liquid?
It's been everything. It's been the very little in the last few days, even though she gets an evening walk, you know, she poops when we walk. Even though she had an evening walk, she had large poops on the kitchen floor.
Okay.
You know, so obviously it became very urgent because never happens.
Right.
But, yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, I definitely see some, you know, elderly dogs whose bowels really start to give them a lot of trouble. I had it happen with my own dog. And it sounds like you've done a lot of the right things. You know, you try sort of an easy digestible diet, which would be the chicken and rice. You know, I think you said you added pumpkin.
Yeah, pumpkin. Or the dehydrated carrots, hydrated up.
Right. The problem with pumpkin is in order to get enough fiber from the pumpkin, you need quite a bit. You know, most people are like, I add a spoonful. That probably doesn't do much.
No.
So you could try an actual fiber supplement like Metamucil. And if I remember correctly, you work it up to a tablespoon for every 20 pounds of dog, but you start slow and work your way up. That's one possibility. I also have had some decent luck with a medication called Thailand powder.
I think we did have good luck with that. But
yeah.
Small amount, like half a teaspoon.
Yeah, usually you can get away with an eighth of a teaspoon. So you can make it last. And I honestly, my dog lived on that the last couple of years of his life. And it was the only thing that kept his stool regular. So it's either, I would either try a different fiber supplement or try the Thailand.
Okay.
And see if that helps you.
Two questions?
I suppose.
Is it accurate that just the chicken breast and white rice by itself is not really nutritionally sufficient for her?
Correct. But there are a lot of dog foods, both prescription and over the counter, that are basically chicken and rice. You just have to be an ingredient label reader.
Yeah, we've been giving her the Earthborn, I think it's called, and she did pretty well on that. And my other question is the hydrated carrot, that you sort of a tablespoon of that hydrated with hot water, is that a good fiber supplement or better?
I don't think of carrots as having a ton of fiber. They're more of a sugary vegetable.
Okay.
I mean, they are going to have some fiber because they're,
what about like kale?
But also, I know some people will do squash, or sweet potatoes. Mm-hmm. Those are other options.
All right, Anne, thanks a lot for the call. Now, are dogs allowed to eat cheese?
Cheese in a dog that's having GI, they don't always digest it great.
Doesn't it bind you up, though?
Yeah, no.
No?
Not really.
All right.
Not really.
Well, there's some folk wisdom that has now been dispensed with. Lisa's in Southampton, Massachusetts. Lisa.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you. You're very loud,
loud and clear.
Hello.
Okay, I'm going to pull over because I'm in an almost dead zone. Thank you for taking my call.
You got it.
I have an almost identical call, except this is for a cat with chronic diarrhea.
Oh.
Who we adopted in 2021, so not quite sure how old he is, but they told us about two. I gathered that that's not terribly accurate. And literally since we've had him, he has had chronic diarrhea. We've done ProViable fiber, and we've done all kinds of supplements and changed the food, changed the protein source. I've taken him to two different vets who've run all kinds of tests. They tell me nothing's wrong with him, but he doesn't make it to the litter box.
Ah.
Oh, boy.
Quick question, Lisa. When you say you've tried different diets, are you doing like an over-the-counter diet? Have you done prescription diets?
We tried the prescription kibble. We tried the one for dental care because they were concerned maybe he wasn't chewing his food sufficiently, and then we had the one for easy digestion. He won't eat the one for easy digestion. They get kibble all day. He has access to that all day, and then they get canned in the morning, and the canned is a limited ingredient, single protein, no dairy, no soy diet.
And what about the kibble? What's in that?
The kibble is currently, we used to have them on also the limited ingredient chicken only because I had another cat for whom that was what worked for him. The second vet that I saw said that chicken is not the most easily digestible for cats. So we switched it to a salmon and pea.
Okay. Uh-huh. All right. Yes. I just know I had a kitty cat with of my own with pretty bad diarrhea, and it turned out she could not handle any poultry, and almost every over-the-counter cat food that you find somewhere in the ingredient list, there's poultry byproducts. So I finally found, I went to a specialty pet store in the Albany area that has a lot of different foods, and I found a beef-only canned food, and it was like a miracle for her.
Huh.
Really?
So sometimes you got to really work on getting the chicken out. I think a lot of cats are sensitive to poultry.
Really? Okay. And we do still have a mix of canned food.
Yeah.
So like sometimes they get chicken and sometimes they get fish.
Right.
But I've never bought beef because I personally don't eat meat, so I don't like to buy it for my cats, but I will if it's going to make him healthy.
I was going to say, you own carnivores, so.
Yeah. That's the thing.
I would try getting the poultry out and see if that makes a difference. Now, unfortunately,
I'll try it.
Yeah, unfortunately, some cats who have had diarrhea for years, it's tough to get rid of.
Yeah.
But you could certainly try that. The good thing with dietary, when they're sensitive, it works pretty quick. So it's not like you have to wait 3 months.
Okay.
Like you're going to know it or it's not going to work.
Lisa, thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest today. It's diarrhea day here on Pets and Vets. 800-348-2551 if you have a question. Could be about anything, really, by the way. Let's go to Jim in Matamoros. Wait a minute. This is not Medical Monday. Jim in Matamoros, you only call on Medical Mondays. Go ahead.
Well, it's Dr. Jimmy Meredith here. The Asian longhorn tick causes paraplasmosis, which is also known as Texas tick fever and babesiosis.
Texas
tick
fever.
It's coming up
fever.
The East Coast now.
Okay.
It was originally diagnosed there. By Theobald Smith over 100 years ago. And the Boophilus tick, but now it's transported to the Asian longhorn tick.
Huh.
All right, good to know.
Yeah, Jim, thank you very much. 800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is here. Let's check the email bag. All right. Joanne from Chester says, for the caller who discussed her pup's chronic diarrhea, Thailand powder was the only thing that helped my dog, diagnosed with C.
perfringens. Clostridia.
All right, fine. Since this is an antibiotic, a new vet preferred we try Propectolin, an over-the-counter supplement. Works great. Just a thought. You ever heard of Propectolin?
Yes, it's another fiber supplement, and I believe it has some probiotic in it as well.
Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest today. It's Pets and Vets. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org for the email. And the number is 800-348-2551. Kyle writes, anal glands dog. I have a 5-year-old cockapoo who seems to be biting his rear end due to impacted anal glands. I've brought him to the vet to express the glands. What can I do to prevent this?
So anal glands are scent glands at the rear end of the dog. They used to mark their territories by pooping around the edge of their territory. And every time they have a bowel movement, these glands are supposed to squirt a little bit of fluid.
Like a skunk?
Well, sort of. It just excretes this fluid out onto the stool. And those sacs are emptied mechanically. So it's pressure from the muscles around the anal area pushing on one side, the poop coming through the rectum pressing on the other side. So if they have a problem with stool quality, so their stools are not well formed, or if they don't have good pressure from the muscle area, i.e. fat dogs,
right?
Or some dogs are just born with really small openings, or if they've gotten scarred from infections, things like that that make it hard to empty, they can get stopped up. And once the fluid sits in the glands for any length of time, it starts to dehydrate.
Yeah.
It should be almost like liquid. I've had it where it's like dried toothpaste. And the poor dog's never going to be able to empty those. So if they're having stool quality issues, you can do things like fiber supplements, things like that, to firm their stool up. If they're overweight, get them to lose weight. I do see some dogs with allergies that have problems with
their... What does weight loss do?
Because the pressure from the muscles around the anus becomes weaker if it's fat.
Ah, okay.
Surrounded by fat.
Sure.
Some allergy dogs have trouble with this, and I think it's because the area gets swollen from allergies. So dealing with their allergies. There are some products out on the market. There's one called Gland X. So Gland X? Gland with EX.
All right, fine.
And it's just a bunch of good, it's got like probiotics, it's got pumpkin, it's got a bunch of different things in it.
Yeah.
That's supposed to help. It purports to help.
Yeah.
I've had mixed results according to my clients. Some people swear by it. Other people said it didn't do anything. Yeah. So,
How long were you a vet?
27 years.
Did you ever question your career choices? Guess I'm having that moment. Nikki's in Bristol, Vermont. Nikki, you're on.
Hey, how are you?
Hello.
So I also have a poo question about my dog.
Okay.
She's older. She's going to be 14. And she has just started the last couple of months of just randomly pooping in the house. Huh. And it's not that she, I mean, she gets outside. She's paid attention to. So it's just, it's not that.
Does she, is it formed?
Like, yeah.
Does it look like normal? Yeah. She may be having
normal.
Yeah, she may just be having some incontinence issues at that age. Some dogs just start to get a little like they don't know the poop's coming out and it just kind of falls out of them. unfortunately, there's not, as far as I know, a great cure for that. I think Dr. Dallas has talked about acupuncture as a possibility.
I think you're right.
To
yes.
help with that.
She'll
so if you have anybody around you that does acupuncture, you could certainly give it a try. You know, the good news is it's easy to clean up.
Okay.
If it's well formed.
Exactly.
But yeah, yeah, I think it's most likely just elderly dog having a little incontinence.
Okay. Nikki, you want to follow up?
Okay.
Well, thanks a lot.
All right. No, thank you very much.
All right. Anybody at all with a question not about number two, let's go to line two and hope for the best. Mark in North Adams, Massachusetts, you're on.
Hi. It's not really about poop this time.
Yay.
My cat is a hunter. But she pretty much eats everything she catches. And I'm just wondering if that's really okay for her. You know, it's mice, chipmunks, birds.
It's a pretty natural cat diet, actually.
Yep.
Okay.
You know, cats are meant to eat a high-protein, low-carb diet. And I read somewhere at some point somebody wrote that mice are like 3% carbs. So
really? So it's like an Atkins thing.
It
good.
Is. The biggest,
so she's doing great then.
Yeah. The biggest concern is parasites. Tapeworms can be carried by rodents and rabbits. So I would just make sure she's getting dewormed, you know, on a seasonal basis. You know, tapeworms are not spread animal to, you know, cat to cat or cat to human. It has to go through that intermediate host. It has to go through the rodent.
Okay.
So it's not a concern to you or your family members if the cat has tapeworms. My hunter cats, I always just spring, summer, fall, winter, once a season, I would throw some dewormer at them.
Is dewormer something that's over the counter?
There is over-the-counter dewormers now. They used to not treat tapeworms, most of them. They mostly did roundworms. But
right.
also, I think most of the flea and tick medicine that's sold now, at least through veterinarians, has a dewormer in it. So you're deworming them monthly if you're treating them.
Okay. Mark.
Yeah, I figured it was probably okay because my last cat was about 23 when she died, and she was always eating what she caught.
Yep.
All right. Well, you know, my cat's the same way. My cat will, you know, could eat all day in the house, and then, ooh, there's a chipmunk. I'm all over this one.
Yeah.
All right, Mark, thanks a lot. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin's our guest today. Aren't you glad you came back from vacation for this?
Yeah.
Let's go to David and Beckett. David, you're on.
Yeah, hello. A year or two ago, my wife decided to start making my dog food. So once a month, she goes to Costco and buys 3 rotisserie chickens and cuts them up with white potatoes, carrots, and celery. And then she also makes either hamburg or a cheap steak that has sweet potatoes, corn, and peas in it. I was just wondering if there was anything she was missing or if this is just fine.
Yeah, so there are a lot of little micronutrients that you want to make sure the dog is getting that may not be just in the plain meat diets, because normally, you know, in the wild, the dog would eat everything, the guts and the bones and the skin and, you know, the whole thing.
Mm.
There is a website called balanceit.com. Not only give you recipes for homemade diets to make sure you're giving balanced amounts of meat and vegetables and all that, but they do sell a vitamin mineral supplement, because 90% of home cooked diets are not balanced. And over the long term, the dog could start to have trouble with bone formation and vision and things like that.
Mm.
So you want to make sure they're getting all their vitamins and minerals that they need to maintain their body in good shape.
David.
Yes, I think I've seen a commercial where there's this product you spread on top that has minerals and stuff in
yep.
it. Yeah.
Yep. So balanceit.com, they have a really good additive for people that want to home cook.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break there. 800-348-2551, the number, 1-800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Check the email bag in a moment. Thad Jones, Frank West, Friday the 13th, that's the name of that one, on not Friday the 13th edition of Vox Pop. It's Wednesday, and Carrie O'Loughlin's here. We are talking pets and vets with you, 800-348-2551, the number, and we'll go back to the phones in a moment. But meantime, here are a few emails. This one's from Vicky in Castleton, 15-year-old cat, subject heading. My cat meows constantly to the point of crying, howling, and when I go to her, she'll stop, but she'll start back up when I walk away. She's also not eating as much as she usually does. Unless I pour some dry kibble, then she eats that. I do make her chicken thighs once in a while. She loves that, but it's not nutritional at the level of cat food. My question: should I bring her to the vet to see if something is going on, like dementia or something like that? The meowing, crying is a daily thing, and I'm starting to wonder if she's okay, or is it all part of aging? And that's from Vicky in Castleton.
Yeah, it'd probably be a good idea to get her checked. There are certain diseases that can make cats yowl more. Hyperthyroidism, which at her age is certainly at the top of the list.
Yeah.
High blood pressure.
Okay.
I'm actually bringing my 16-year-old cat in tomorrow to check her blood pressure. She started doing some yowling. So those are two things. So, yeah, it wouldn't hurt to get a blood panel done and check her blood pressure and make sure there's nothing amiss. I think sometimes it can be they're starting to lose hearing or sight a little bit, and they're kind of like, hey, where is everybody? And then they're like, oh, there you are.
Well, I mean, some cats are just needy, though. They want you around,
right? Yeah,
but if
it's a change in behavior.
I figured out my cat is now getting to the point where, you know, he's a little spaced out. And in the middle of the night, we'll go downstairs to have a little water or some food and then sort of forget where we are, that we're upstairs, and meow until I pop. Cat doesn't hear that well, and that might be part of it. I'll pop up the top of the steps, say, come on up, and then the meowing stops. It's really crazy. All right, let's see here. This is from Lori. My 14-year-old cat was recently diagnosed with hyperthyroidism. I'm treating her with the transdermal ear gel, but I'm curious about the radioactive iodine treatment. I understand it's very expensive, and she would need to be in the animal hospital for several days. But is it truly a cure, and are there any side effects of that treatment?
So radioactive iodine is actually considered the gold standard treatment.
What does it do exactly?
I mean, it's supposed to kill off the abnormal thyroid tissue and leave the normal thyroid tissue behind. So it is technically a cure. The concerns are sometimes cats that have an overactive thyroid, the fact that the thyroid gland is pushing out excessive amounts of thyroid hormone, it boosts the metabolism, which includes boosting blood flow out of the heart, which keeps the kidneys very happy. So if you have an older cat who's on the verge of going into kidney disease, it can mask it. So usually even the radioactive iodine people want you to treat the cat medically first, make sure the kidneys are going to be okay. And then if everything is stable, then they can go for the radioactive iodine. And I've only had, I had one cat who had the radioactive iodine treatment and then became hypothyroid, and they had to treat the cat with thyroid hormone because I guess there was no more normal thyroid tissue left. That was only one cat. I also had one cat who did go into kidney failure right after the treatment. But most of the cats do fine. I worked with another vet who had her cat treated because her cat was diagnosed really young at like 9. And it worked great until he was about 17. And then he became hyperthyroid again. And at that point, she just gave him medication. The cost tends to balance out if the cat lives another 3 years. Because between, you know, the cost of the radioactive iodine, you're paying everything up front.
So you're amortizing the cat.
But then you don't have to be bringing the cat in all the time to get rechecked. You don't have to be paying for the medication, et cetera. So it balances out after about 3 years.
All right. One more email here with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, and then we'll jump back to the phones. We'll check the email bag late in the program if we can. Jess writes in, our 4-year-old 7-pound chihuahua seems to have allergies, and our vet suggested trying Benadryl, but said it's not always effective. What have you found that helps with dog allergies? We have 3 dogs, and they each get Glandex and Proden Plaqof daily. All right.
I'm assuming the Plaqof is for teeth.
Okay.
It's probably a dental supplement.
Sounds
to help
like
with
a pejorative. Hey, what a Plaqof. Let me tell you.
So antihistamines in dogs rarely work.
Really?
Maybe 10 to 20% of the time, maybe. So if it's a summer allergy, so they're allergic to pollens, things like that, it's reducing their exposure. So bathing them frequently, 2-3 times a week during allergy season, because you're basically washing the pollen off. You're keeping them from licking it. Having it absorbed through the skin, etc. And it's also soothing to dogs who are having skin issues. It doesn't hurt to bathe your dog frequently if you're using a little bit of shampoo and making sure you rinse it off.
But, I mean, could this be food allergies?
Oh, it could be. It could be.
Doesn't really say.
Yeah, if it's, you know, but this time of year, dogs that are allergic, it's likely to be grass, pollen, those kind of allergies.
You know, speaking of, from my own experience with allergies over the years, antihistamines will knock me out. I'll fall asleep. Will dogs do the same?
Nah, not necessarily. I usually tell people run through the antihistamines. You know, try Benadryl, try Claritin, try Zyrtec. You know, give them all a week or two because some dogs it does help. But if it's not helping, then you got to go, you know, to the next step. And there, of course, there's all sorts of newer medications, both by pill and injection, that work really well for itch. But the basic things are bathing. You can use an oatmeal shampoo that's very soothing for itch.
Yeah.
It's contact time, though. So you bathe, you get the shampoo on the dog. And I used to let my dog go out in the backyard and run around for 20 minutes.
With the shampoo?
With the shampoo.
The dog won't lick himself?
Nope. And if they do, they're just getting some soap. It's not going to hurt them. And then you rinse them off really well. Make sure you get all the soap off. Fatty acid supplements work well, you know, fish oils, things like that. They make balanced fatty acid supplements for dogs that can be very helpful.
Huh.
And I'm trying to think, it's been a while since I've done the allergy talk.
The allergy talk.
It's all so you do all summer long, now, believe me, yes. So, but really, antihistamines are very hit and miss,
is
the bottom line.
Go back to the phones. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin joins us on this edition of Pets and Vets. Let's go to Copaic and Maureen. Maureen, you're on.
Hi. I have an 8-year-old beagle that had an x-ray this morning on his front leg. About a week ago, he suddenly went lame on that leg, couldn't put weight on it. And the finding came back that he's got arthritis in his shoulders. My question is, he'd been on carprofen during the week, and it worked, then it didn't work, then it worked. What have you found to be successful in treating arthritis in older dogs?
So, Maureen, I will tell you, front leg arthritis is always tougher on dogs than hind leg because they're just they bear more weight on the front end. It's harder for them to take that weight off. You know, back leg, they can just pick the leg up and run along. You hardly even notice there's anything wrong.
He's had two cruciates, so he's had four surgeries on his rear leg, so he's always had some issue.
Yeah, but elbow and shoulder arthritis is tougher for them. So the lameness always seems to be a little more obvious, and it can come and go because it's so hard they forget. They jump off the couch, and now they've just aggravated again, things like that. Is he overweight?
He could be a pound or two overweight. He's 40 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, we know beagles love to eat. So, you know, getting the weight off would really, really help. And then, you know, using a medication like carprofen is good. And then there are also now newer injections for arthritis.
That's what I was wondering about.
Yep. What they found is, you know, you give it monthly to start and you see how he does and then see how long he can go between shots. But like for the first couple of shots, you do it every month and then you see if you could stretch it out. Some dogs, after a while, they find they can stretch it out to 6-8 weeks, so it's not quite so expensive. Other things you can look at are things like, again, fatty acid supplements. They found that actually works fairly well for arthritis on top of everything else.
Fatty acid supplements? What would that be?
Like a fish oil type supplement?
Okay.
So weight loss, fatty acid supplements, and pain relief. Those are the big three for doggy arthritis. And last but not least, you could look into alternatives like acupuncture, things like that.
And we'll talk about that maybe more next time, next month. Maureen, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. You know, it's been said, I have no idea, I've never owned a dog, but cats are really good at masking pain. Are dogs wimps? Do dogs show it a lot more? How are you going to tell if the dog can go 6 to 8 weeks?
If they're limping.
Oh, well, that's true.
I get clients all the time who said, no, they're not in pain. He's just limping. I'm like, he's limping because it hurts when he puts weight on the leg. So if they're not, you know, if they're limping.
Okay. Let's go to Knox, and Jay is on. Hello, Jay.
Hello. So I have a, can you hear me okay?
Sure, go ahead.
You bet.
Okay. So I have a 17-year-old Maltese Chihuahua mix. She's blind, mostly deaf, and I, you know, I suspect she has not got a lot of time left in life. But she's happy, you know, wagging her tail and stuff, patrolling the house for whatever she does. And the one thing that kind of alarmed me was she stopped eating dog food a week ago. First it was the kibbles, and then it was the wet food. But it turns out my wife's, after a couple of days, said, let me just try to give her some of the cat food, and she gobbled it right up.
Wow.
I went out and got her a better brand of dog food, a couple of different varieties. None of it seems to really interest her, but she does seem to like the cat food. So I guess I'm wondering, is this, I read, you know, kind of mixed stuff on this. Is this going to hurt her? I mean, she's probably in her final days.
Maybe
weeks.
I would let her eat the cat food.
Okay.
Usually the problem with cat food is it's much higher in protein for the most part than dog foods. And it tends to fatten dogs up. That's usually the biggest problem. You know, it's more expensive. So you got a, you know, you got a big dog eating up all your cat food. You're going to, you know, go through a lot. A Chihuahua, not eating that much, you know, and if it's going to keep her eating at this point, there's nothing bad in the cat food for the dog. It's usually just too rich. So the biggest problem would be the sudden increase in protein level could cause diarrhea.
And now we're back to the beginning of the show.
Not to take you back to number two, but she's not pooping a lot, and her pee is very, it's clear for the most part. I don't know if her kidneys are starting
it's probably some kidney issues. But, you know, like you said, if this were a dog that had years and years ahead of her, I would say, not so good. But if you're just keeping her happy for what time she's got left, let her have her cake.
Okay, Jay, thank you very much. Now let's go to Maryland and Pat. Pat, where are you in Maryland?
Oh, I'm pulled over right now, just at the Delaware-Maryland border, so we're good.
Okay, you go ahead. You're on the air.
I have a question about a Staffordshire Terrier. She was fostered and then adopted in Mississippi, so she should be used to heat. Has lived in Baltimore since 2020. So no acts normally, spring, winter, fall. But when that humidity level and hot days, she's okay. But when that humidity level increases, she poops out real quick. Just needs to lay down and get herself organized and then get back up again. So my question is, she accepts water when it's offered to her. Just wondering if there's anything we need to consider about that, or we're just respecting her needs and she's just an intolerant, not fond of the humidity.
To be honest, that's what it sounds like to me. If she doesn't get exercise intolerant any other time of year, then I'd be a little worried that there could be an underlying heart issue. But if it's just during the high humidity, I think she's, I don't do well in high humidity.
No,
so,
sounds like a smart dog.
She may just be a dog who doesn't like it. So I would just make sure she gets shade and water and cooled off. I mean, at least with her, worst case scenario, hose her off. She's got such a short coat.
Yeah.
And sometimes, unfortunately, that short coat is not great for them because they don't have the insulating factor from the sun. So sometimes it's easier for dogs with a super short coat to overheat. So.
Okay.
Yeah. And she hates the water, so she won't tolerate the water. The hose.
Right.
And then just one other quick question. She's a belly sensitive dog, and she's been mostly on chicken. Should we consider moving to the beef? I heard you mention earlier something about maybe trying the beef and not the chicken.
Yeah, so she gets itchy on her belly?
In the past, not so much, but it's more she has irregular bowels.
Right.
They can be loose at times, yes.
Yeah, so you could certainly try a different protein source, but again, you have to read the labels because a lot of dog food, like cat food, it'll say fish on the front label, and the third ingredient is chicken byproducts.
There you go.
So
yeah.
Make sure you read the ingredient list.
Pat, thanks a lot for the call. We only have about 30 seconds here, but I have to take this one from Lori in Saratoga. Lori, this sounds like a tough problem. Make it quick.
Okay, my dog hates his tail, and I don't know what to do about it.
The dog hates his own tail. Okay, well, what do you think, Doc?
What is he doing that makes you think he hates his tail?
He will growl at it and try to, bite it off, and anytime he gets startled, the first reaction he has is goes after his tail.
Wow. Do you like the tail, Lori?
How old of a dog is this?
He's 3 years old. He's a Lhasa Apso mix, but he's on the bigger side for a Lhasa Apso, and I keep his tail, mid-length. It does have a little, I've tried trimming it shorter, but he still goes after it.
Okay.
All right, we're almost out of
time. Yeah, it could be his anal glands that he's actually going after, or some dogs actually have a seizure disorder where they go after their tail.
Oh, interesting. All right, so very quickly, what would you recommend here?
Just get him checked by the vet.
Okay, Lori, we got to go. I'm sorry, we're way over time. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, thanks for coming back to reality here with us. I appreciate it. Support comes from Inquiring Minds Bookstores, New Paltz Saugerties, proudly independent with books, vinyl, CDs, organic coffee and teas made with fresh local spring water, in-store shopping, curbside pickup, local delivery, inquiringbooks.com. Agricultural Stewardship Association, working to help people conserve farmland and forests in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve working land for good forever. agstewardship.org. At Bennington Battlefield State Historic Site, Hoosick, New York, presenting a living painting and 250th celebration, Saturday, July 4th at 2:30 p.m. 518-268-2558 for more information. Thanks again to Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin for being here today. Thank you for listening. Boy, that was a good one. If you like that sort of thing. Thanks to our engineer, Riley Phillips, and Susie Chekai screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's gardening. We will not discuss anal glands tomorrow.